The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. My name is Carrington. Very happy to be here. Quentin is here as well. Rob is off today. He went to the KU and North Carolina game. Good luck to both teams. That's what I'll say. They're college kids. You know, I'm not actively rooting against anybody in these matchups. I want to see a tightly contested, well-played game on both sides. That's what I'm rooting for. Quentin, don't even look at me. I bet on KU today.
I don't believe you.
I'll show you my parlay.
No, I believe you bet on KU. I don't believe that you want a well-contested, good luck to both sides. I don't believe that.
No, I mean, the fact that they were giving away a boost on FanDuel is a 50% boost. Yeah, so I'll even tell you what I took. I took KU on the money line. I also took Hunter Dickinson to have 15 points, and I took him to have 10 rebounds today. I got it at plus 210. And I gotta watch the game anyway. Let me at least try and make a little bit of money while I'm watching the game. And then if they lose, I'll be a little disappointed.
Yeah, but
you know
what?
The loss will just, you know, it won't be that bad. It's not the worst thing that can happen, you know? All right, so with a lot to get into. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about the Bengals, but I think the Bengals are a pretty important story. Let me read to you guys a tweet that popped up earlier today from Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. I know how much you guys love Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. So the tweet from Mike Florio after Thursday Night Football yesterday that has been making the rounds is about the Cincinnati Bengals. Let me pull it up here for you guys really quickly. The team that is the most happy about the Chiefs, or excuse me, about the Bengals' struggles right now are the Kansas City Chiefs. With each Bengals loss, they come closer to not having to face their kryptonite in the postseason. Joe Burrow is the only active quarterback to ever beat Patrick Mahomes in the postseason. So I'm sure this is the sentiment that a lot of you also agree with. We don't want to see Cincinnati again anymore. They've always played Kansas City tough. It's fine to have that opinion. But I want to give you some facts because I can't argue with your feelings on things. All I can do is try to present the facts of this. Did you guys know that since the Burrowhead comments, Cincinnati is 13-15 since then? They are 7-7 in home games, and they also are 0-3 at Arrowhead. So let's even say that you remove the games against the Kansas City Chiefs. They're 13-12 against the rest of the NFL since they last went to the AFC Championship game. I only bring this up for Cincinnati is at some point with them, we have to talk about what they are and not what we think they can be. I'm not willing to play the schedule game for a team that lost to the New England Patriots earlier in the season. I'm not willing to play that game. I'm not willing to play a schedule game with a team that their only wins are against four of the worst teams in the league. every win that they have is against a team that would currently pick in the top five of the NFL draft, and they all have two wins. So if you were telling me that I should still hold out hope for the Cincinnati and they've got this and they've got that, we got to talk about the facts. Did you know that right now every team in the AFC has given up fewer points in their defense? They are 16th in the AFC in defense. So wait, you're telling me this. You're telling me that the Bengals are not good at winning close games. You're also telling me they can't protect their quarterback. And you're also telling me that they could quite possibly have the worst defense in the AFC. And they're also 30th against the pass. That's not a team to me that goes on a run at the end of the season. I know that the AFC is down. I know the AFC is weak. But there's three groups of teams. There's the contenders. Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore. The contenders. I would then say there's the middle. There's about four or five teams that are in the middle. And maybe that's where you want to put Cincinnati. Maybe the middle's a little bit bigger than that. That's where you put your Denvers. That's where you put your Los Angeles Chargers. That's where you put a handful of teams are right there in the middle. That's why I would put Pittsburgh. I think they're in the middle. And then you've got the absolute dregs of the league. Tennessee's terrible. The Patriots are terrible. Those teams. So if you're telling me that Cincinnati is still in it because they're not up for the number one overall pick, sure. But what has Cincinnati shown you that would suggest that in the second half of the season, they're about to get right, get hot, and go on a little bit of a run? The playoff is kind of simple. I would say it's way more straightforward than what we think it is in college football. If you want to be a wild card team, you got to win at least 9 games. You're not getting a wild card spot with a losing record. You can maybe win the right division in the right year at 8-9. You are not making the playoffs as a wild card team with a losing record. So if you think that Cincinnati is going to make the postseason, they got to figure out a way to get to 9. They've got 4. And they have 1 game between now and the 1st of December. There's not a lot of time left. It's not early anymore. It was kind of cute to blow off those assignments early in the semester. Man, we're past the midterms now, and you still got a D. So you better put some A work together in the second half of the semester, or you are going to fail this class. And so far, that is all really what we've seen from the Cincinnati Bengals. So I'm not a believer in Cincinnati. I'm willing to kick dirt on the Cincinnati Bengals. It is important to note that since they said this,
we'll see y'all in Burrowhead.
Yeah, baby.
We'll see y'all in Burrowhead. Yeah.
And since their mayor said this.
Good afternoon, Cincinnati. I have a proclamation from the desk of the mayor. Be it proclaimed, whereas the Cincinnati Bengals are headed to Burrowhead Stadium for their second consecutive AFC Championship game. Whereas at last year's game, the Bengals scored more points than the Chiefs, resulting in a Bengals victory and a Chiefs loss. Whereas Joseph Lee Burrow, who's 3-0 against Mahomes, has been asked by officials to take a paternity test confirming whether or not he's his father. Whereas all season long, Cincinnati has been on a path of destiny, fighting it out to overcome anyone who stands between them and a Super Bowl win. And whereas Kansas City is named after its neighboring state, which is, you know, just kind of weird. Now therefore, I, Aftab Pierval, mayor of the city of Cincinnati, do hereby proclaim January 29th, 2023, as they gotta play us day in Cincinnati. Thank you.
Since that soundbite, they have won fewer games than the Denver Broncos. That's who Cincinnati is. That's who they are. Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, they've won 2 games by 1 point. I get it. Good teams find a way to win, but I'm not counting them out yet. They're still a good team. They're 4-6 through the first 10 games of the season. If you think that they're a good team, then you think they're going to turn into the Chiefs in the second half of the season. The Chiefs go 6-1 over 7-game stretches. The Lions go 6-1 over 7-game stretches. Average teams don't really get hot in that way, not in the second half of the season. So again, I don't think they're a good team. I think they used to be a good team. Every team that we talk about, I guess in this context, I've seen them grow and develop over the course of the last couple of years. You can't say that about Cincinnati. We've seen the over the last, since they said the Burrowhead comments, We've seen the Lions improve. We've seen Kansas City evolve and change and adapt and continue to be a great team. Baltimore, still really good. Buffalo is still really good. All of those, San Francisco has been to the Super Bowl since then. All of those teams are still good. Cincinnati has not shown us that they're a good team in a year and a half. And it used to be a what have you done for me lately kind of league. What you've handed me is mediocre work. Outside of playing the Chiefs, you have been 13-12 in your last 25 games. And now I'm supposed to think that that team's going to win five of their next six, and now we can start counting automatic wins for them? No, I'm not doing that with the Cincinnati Bengals. You got to prove it to me. We used to live in the show me state. What has Cincinnati shown you of late? They haven't shown me anything.
And if you just look at some of the other wild card teams, we got to remember that the Steelers are technically winning the AFC North, which means the Baltimore Ravens are a wild card team. Then you look at number 6 and 7. We've got the Chargers and the Broncos both filling that spot. We've talked about the reasons why the Broncos have been good. When you look at the Broncos this year, there are reasons to say, hey, there are good things about that team. The Chargers, same thing. When Chargers week comes around, and even when we face them earlier, we're like, look, John Harbaugh, what can they do? They can run the ball. They've got a good quarterback. Then you've got teams on the bubble like the Colts who have made a shift at quarterback that probably makes them a better team. And even if you look at the Bengals, the rest of the AFC North, you've got the Browns, who are only 2 wins back from them, have made a switch at quarterback, and they look better than what they did the week beforehand. I don't need to hear about the Bengals anymore, because if you just look at it, the deck has been stacked against them because of their actions early in the year. There is nothing that the Bengals can do. I don't think that they're going to win the next 5 out of the next 7 games. You still got to play the Steelers twice. I just don't think that there's anything that they can do moving forward in order to make the playoffs, even though there are seven different opportunities.
You know what? Quinn, I will give you de facto hit number one here with your thoughts about Xavier Worthy. I have a lot of thoughts, but you know what? You're a guest here. I will give you hit number one with your thoughts about Xavier Worthy. Hit the music!
Yeah, so my thing is with Xavier Worthy and what I think is going to be a new passing offense with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins. I know he's been here for a couple weeks, but I think we saw what Xavier Worthy is now going to be inside of this Chiefs offense because of what DeAndre Hopkins brings to the offense. I don't think that we're going to see a lot of Xavier Worthy, you know, getting some of those schemed up plays anymore over the middle. I think what we saw on Monday, right, he gets one deep open pass. Maybe he gets some more of those end arounds, and that's okay. Xavier Worthy, we know what he is. He needs time to develop. DeAndre Hopkins, the fact that he's going to get more of those targets is a good thing for Xavier Worthy. I think that's what he is moving forward.
All right, fade the music down a little bit, and let's talk a little bit more extended about Xavier Worthy. I was thinking this as Nate Taylor was talking earlier when we asked him this question, and he said that Xavier Worthy is a home run hitter. Usually we make a basketball analogy. Let's use a baseball analogy this time. Let's keep with the home run hitter theme. I don't disagree about Xavier Worthy. I think he absolutely is a home run hitter. I think we also know, at least at this stage in his career, he doesn't really hit for average, and he's also not going to walk. So sometimes that guy is going to have a 2-for-4 day. He's going to hit 2 home runs, and boy, it's going to look great. He's also going to have some 0-for-4 days where he strikes out 4 times, and you are going to want to pull your hair out. I think that's what we've seen Xavier Worthy be. I think we have seen what it can look like when it really works. That game one, it really, really worked. But I think it's important to note that since the first game, so since the end around touchdown, he scored his first touch of the game, he has had 16 yards rushing since then. So in his last 7 games, he has not been a great rushing threat for the Kansas City Chiefs. Over the course of the last 4 games, he also has 70 yards receiving in those games too. So he hasn't really been a great passing threat for you either. I think we need to be a little bit more realistic about sort of what we think he's going to be. Xavier Worthy came out of college as a 5'11", 165 speedster guy. He was never the route runner that Devontae Smith was at Alabama. He was a good prospect with some upside that in the right system, in the right scheme, it could work. Now, I think it's important to note, Kansas City is the right scheme, but I don't think that Xavier Worthy is the lead singer of your group. I think he can be a really strong backup singer. And because of the injuries that they have in that wide receiver room, you're kind of asking Xavier Worthy to be something that he's not. Some guys are just 12 point per game scores. You might put him in a system and you think they're going to become 21-point-per-game guys, but no, that's not what he is. He's a 12-point-per-game, knock down a couple of shots, play defense. I think that's what Xavier Worthy is, but because of the injuries, more has been sort of expected to him in this offense. I think he's coming along just fine with what I thought he was going to be at the very beginning of the year. I just think it's going to take some time. There just aren't many prospects that come into the National Football League at 21 years old, less than 6 foot, 165 pounds, and they're just dominating the league. Sure, we can find a couple of examples. That's what Jackson was coming out of Cal, DeSean Jackson. That's also what Devontae Smith was. Devontae Smith won the Heisman Trophy as a wide receiver. You know how good of a wide receiver you got to be to win the award? Think about that. He's one of the three wide receivers to win the award in the last 30 years. That's not the kind of prospect any of us thought that Xavier Worthy was. And I just, he's not DeSean Jackson. The league is also different than that time with how teams are defending and doing all those kind of things. So I think that Worthy is actually developing at a pretty reasonable pace with where we are. I'm with you. I would like to see a little bit more in the screen game, see a little end around, see a lot of that stuff kind of infused into the offense. And I think they'll do a good job of manufacturing those touches. But we've passed the first half of the season. We are now entering into the second half of the season. And let's see how his role continues to develop.
I think you're exactly right. I would like to see some more bubble screen games, especially when we play some aggressive defenses. We're going to see that coming up. I imagine Buffalo is going to play pretty aggressive against Mahomes, so I would like to see him used in some more of those. But to end this conversation, it's okay that he's not going to be, you know, the reception-heavy guy that some of you guys thought he was going to be. Man, Vegas had him 755.5 yards for his total heading into this year. That was never going to happen, and we should be okay with what we have because of DeAndre Hopkins coming here. We should be very happy with what we get from Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, and also just looking at his kind of splits and how you kind of add it up over the course of the year, I would say that this is probably in line to what you thought he was going to be. I mean, this is what he is on pace to do right now, and I would guess he would actually do a little bit better than this. Right now, his 17-game average, he is on pace to have 40 catches for 499 yards and have 6 receiving touchdowns and have 2 rushing touchdowns. If I had told you that Xavier Worthy was going to have a little less than 600 yards from the line of scrimmage and also have 6 touchdowns, that's exactly what you would have taken in the beginning of the season. But they don't have Hollywood Brown, so somebody's got to step up in that role. They don't have Juju now. Somebody's got to step up in that role. I just don't think it's going to be Xavier Worthy, and I think that's perfectly fine. Let's get to number 2.
Number 2.
All right, hit number 2 is, let's talk about DeAndre Hopkins and what we think his role is going to be on this team. Because I think this team is kind of in need of consistent wide receiver presence. There's sort of 3 questions that I have heading into this game. Number 1 is, can the Chiefs just have an easy fourth quarter? When's the last time the Chiefs just had an easy, carefree, stress-free fourth quarter? You know, for a team that's clearly the best, for a team that's running circles around the rest of the league, you know what would be really good at like 2:15? If you could just turn the Chiefs game off or just go do something else because they're comfortably in the lead. But that's usually not how it is. It's really tight heading into the third quarter. You got to be banging the back of your seat at Arrowhead. You know what? What if they played a game where they were up 21-3 going into half? You guys remember when Taylor Swift first took the game? When was the last time they did a team like how they did the Chicago Bears? Just an outright beatdown. Just, we're better than you. We're going to show you that we're better than you. And then we're going to go out afterwards and we're going to have an amazing time. We saw the Ravens do that last week to the Broncos. Can the Chiefs do that to the Broncos? We'll obviously see. We talked about Xavier Worthy and what his role can be on this team as we head into the second half of the season. I also think it's about D-Hop and continuing to build that rapport with Patrick Mahomes and get him to a point where next week, I don't want to say that next week is a must-win game because obviously they can lose this game, they can go on the road or whatnot. But if you really take a look at the standings, I cannot think of a regular season game that has more importance for Kansas City over the course of the last couple of years. You're already 4 games up on Baltimore. You're 3 games up on Houston, and you play them later in the year. You also play Pittsburgh. I mean, this is the difference. So let's say Kansas City wins this week, Buffalo wins this week, right? and then you play each other. Winning next week puts you four games ahead of Buffalo. Losing puts you one game ahead of Buffalo with seven to go. That's drastically different. Drastically different out of the two. So getting DeAndre Hopkins continued ready for that and what his role is going to be in the offense, I think is still one of the top storylines for this team. There's not a lot of, I think, kind of check engine-like signs right now for the Chiefs. Wide receiver is one of those. And I would also say it's corner and kind of how you hold up in that scenario. Now, I don't really think that Denver is a team that's going to challenge you with their wide receiver unit against your cornerback room. And you feel like you can cover Cortland Sutton. They don't really have a great tight end. That's been a weakness for the Kansas City Chiefs. But Denver is not a team to me that can outscore Kansas City. They can muddy the game up and make the game a low-scoring 19-17 weird kind of game, but if this game is 28-24, the Broncos are not scoring 28 points against the Kansas City Chiefs unless they get some tremendous help from Kansas City to do that. But are the Broncos kind of squirrely enough to really muddy this game up? Bo Nix runs around and makes a few plays. They protect the football. They turn Kansas City over a couple times, and they make this a low-scoring game that's played under 21. I don't think they can do that if D-Hop has a good game.
Yeah, if DeAndre Hopkins goes off, then I think that you're looking at a Chiefs winning comfortably. The Denver defense, you know, has had a pretty good year up to this point. They're third in the NFL in points per game at 17.9, and they've played some pretty big offensive teams. So not only they're third in the NFL, right? They lost 41-10 last week. So, you know, that's going to take a hit to your average. But they also beat Tampa Bay 26-7 early in the year before all of their wide receivers got hurt. So this is a team that has stood up to some better teams and has been able to play good defense. We talked about earlier about how they have the eighth best rush defense with only allowing 4 yards per carry. So if they're going to try and come in and win this game, they're going to need to shut Kansas City's run defense or run game down with Kareem Hunt, who was on the injury report earlier this week while we're expecting him to play. You know, is this the sort of game that he gets beat up on and isn't able to get his 3 yards a carry, you know, basically every time he carries the ball? So that's how Denver is. If they're looking for a way to win, that's how they're going to have to do it. And if they are able to do that, yeah, it's going to be a low-scoring game.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the only way that the Broncos can beat the Chiefs is if this game becomes a rock fight. And I would say they have the defense. It's a possibility. I've told you guys over the course of the week, there aren't many games on the Chiefs' schedule that I would say, oh, I'm a little worried about this game. Sure, the Chiefs can lose. It's football any given Sunday. But this is a game that worries me a little bit about the Broncos. And the Broncos have some of the ingredients, you think, to make this game a little bit more uncomfortable than it needs to be in the final 15, 10 minutes of this game. Now, and we could talk about this more coming up on the other side, there's a major question that the Broncos have to answer against Kansas City. You have a very inexperienced quarterback, and how is that guy going to handle the pressure that Kansas City is going to bring? And we know that Spags is going to scheme this thing up. Bo Nix is going into the toughest environment that he has played so far in his young career, and he's also going up against, by far and away, the most complex defense that he has gone up against. We'll talk about that coming up on the other side. Keep.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Right here's the drive.
Fans, it's Trent McDuffie. Welcome to The Drive with CDOT on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Let me update you guys on something college football related. Brady Cook is not expected to play tomorrow against Oklahoma, so it sounds like Drew Pine's going to start for Missouri. This season had so much promise. Quentin, they were ranked in the top 12 to start the season. And they had a squishy schedule this year. It was tailor-made to do something special. It really was. It was gifted to you from the SEC gods, and now they're going to win 7 games. I mean, just... I just wanted to share that information with you guys, that Brady Cook is... He's not going to play tomorrow, so... Good luck to Missouri as they take on Oklahoma in a vaunted, a long-standing SEC matchup. I mean, you know, just... You got to throw out the record when those two teams play in SEC play, you know, just a long-standing rivalry up there with Auburn, Alabama, you know, up there with Georgia, Florida, just long-standing, great all-time SEC rivalries, Quentin.
You know, I didn't have high hopes for this game, you know, heading before the news even came out, just because I didn't think it was going to be a very intriguing game to begin with. But man, that really... Jay Binkley would say, whiz in your Wheaties. So, yeah, that's no fun.
Let's talk a little bit about Bo Nix here for a bit. Bo Nix has actually put together a pretty decent, pretty competitive rookie season. I think this is the rookie season that I would say, if you're not going to get one of those top prospects, like they didn't get Jaden Daniels, they didn't get Caleb Williams, this is kind of the year that you would want your rookie quarterback to have. He is on pace. So this is what he's on pace to do this season. He's on pace to throw for 3,300 yards. He's on pace to run for about 700 yards this season. And he's thrown 15 touchdown passes and on pace to have 8. Like he's had a pretty good, solid season. I am going to be really curious to see how Bo Nix performs against this defense. Like, there's only, I would say, one team on their schedule that is anywhere close to what this team is defensively, and that's Pittsburgh. They played Pittsburgh earlier this year, and it went kind of how you thought it would go with Bo Nix going up against a defense of that magnitude. The Broncos scored 6 points in that game. Bo Nix did not throw a touchdown pass. The Steelers made them very, very one-dimensional. Javonte Williams had 11 carries for 17 yards in that matchup. They just completely squeezed the life out of the Broncos offense. Now, that was week 2, and now this is week 10, so we'll see if Bo Nix has developed or not, but we've seen him go up against an elite defense, and it didn't look very good the first time. Are the Broncos going to be able to run the ball against Kansas City? No one's been able to really run the ball consistently against Kansas City, and do they have enough weapons on the outside where if Bo Nix is going to have to throw it 30, 35, 40 times, is that a game script that he can handle? That's what happened against the Steelers. He threw it 35 times, and he didn't throw a touchdown pass, and their offense was completely out of whack. I think this is a really telling stretch for the Denver Broncos. They beat Tampa Bay earlier in the season, and since then, their wins are the Jets, Raiders, the Saints, and the Carolina Panthers. So this is a big jump up in terms of degree of difficulty. They got blown out last week against the Ravens, and they have Atlanta next week. So you played a playoff team in Baltimore. You were not competitive against that team. You go on the road in your division and play Kansas City, a team over the last couple of years, they haven't won a whole lot, but they've been kind of competitive against Kansas City. They beat them last year 24-9. Vic Fangio and that defense always kind of gave the Chiefs a little bit of trouble. And then you got Atlanta at home next week, and they are maybe the second best team in the NFC. That there's a handful of teams, and we talked about that off the jump in regards to Cincinnati. There's a handful of teams in the AFC that you don't really know a whole lot about, and I think you could put the Broncos in that category. But this is the stretch that if they continue to get blown out the way that they did last week to the Baltimore Ravens, that will tell us everything that we need to know about Denver. But their quarterback's playing a little bit better than you think, and their defense has been one of the five best in the AFC. The Broncos have been a competitive game through the first half, or team through the first half of the season. Now we'll see if you can carry it into the second half of the season.
Yeah, I think that if Denver has Bo Nix throwing the ball 30, 35, 40 times a game. This game has been out for a while, and Kansas City is playing some prevent defense. I don't see that is not a winning strategy for the Broncos. This is going to come down to a game where if you're going to throw the ball, they have to be a quick hitters. They have to try and move the defense because Spagnuolo loves to go up against rookie quarterbacks. And while Bo Nix is somewhat mobile in the pocket, I think that this Chiefs defense with its crazy schemes and its crazy blitzes is going to be able to get after him. We talked about earlier on the show, C-Dot, about how low the average depth of target is for Bo Nix and how that is really going to be where they have to live, right? Sort of that Sean Payton, Drew Brees style of offense that he had late in the Drew Brees career, where it was quick slants, bubble screens, running backs coming out of the backfield, catching the ball. That's where the Broncos are going to have to live because I don't think that they have the firepower on the outside, and I don't think the Chiefs defense is going to give Bo Nix enough time to try and hit those deep hitters. That's where that the Broncos have to live if they're going to throw the ball.
I'm really big on yards per attempt. I think it's one of the most important stats to tell you if a quarterback is good or not. Trevor Lawrence is 16th in yards per attempt. He is at 7.3, so that's what average is. Bo Nix is at 6.0 so far. So to give you an idea of the quarterbacks that are around him in yards per attempt, it's Spencer Rattler, Tyler Huntley, Skylar Thompson, Will Levis, Aiden O'Connell. It's that group. Now, that's not uncharacteristic for a quarterback in his first year. That's actually kind of how it goes. And then you kind of move up the list as you become a more confident passer, understand defenses better, et cetera, and those kind of things. The Chiefs usually perform pretty well against those kinds of quarterbacks. Like, if you're telling me there's really no vertical threat for what the Broncos can do offensively, they also don't really have a strong tight end, I would say if you were trying to find any weakness for this defense, you would probably say the Chiefs don't defend tight ends very well. They didn't defend the Ravens tight end very well last week against Tampa Bay with Cade Otton. He had a pretty decent game against them. That's probably the one area of the field and player that kind of gives their defense a little bit of trouble. The Broncos also aren't a team that can really take advantage of that. So it's really going to come down to, can the Broncos run the football successfully and can they maintain a little bit of balance? Because we saw what Pittsburgh was able to do to them, and if that's the same game script for Denver, that is just not a game that I think they can win.
And I think that the Chiefs can play the Pittsburgh style of defense against them where, you know, you're really just squeezing the life out of it, right? You trust McDuffie on the outside and, you know, whatever rotations of corners that you think that the Chiefs are going to have, I'm trust that they're able to work against the, you know, whatever wide receiver that the Denver Broncos are going to put out there as their number two. And so if Kansas City is going to play, you know, these big guys up front and just go after the quarterback, I think that that is a winning record for what Kansas City is able to do. And we haven't even talked about, you know, the Chiefs offense side of it. I think that not only just because of DeAndre Hopkins and what we talked about earlier, but we haven't even talked about, you know, what's Travis Kelce been able to do against the Broncos and who on the Broncos is going to be able to stop Travis Kelce.
Yeah, you would have to think that they're maybe going to try Sertan at least at some point to try to slow him down. But you also have DeAndre Hopkins that you would think Sertan would go up against him. I mean, that's a really, really difficult matchup for the Broncos, certainly. We talked about this a little bit with Nate Taylor about the cornerback position. Trent McDuffie, who I think is certainly inserted himself into that conversation of being the best corner in the NFL. Really, at this point, to me, the only difference between what people think about McDuffie and where they kind of put Sauce Gardner and where they put Trent McDuffie really comes down to Trent McDuffie just doesn't have an interception yet. And we kind of know how this works. The guys that get the interceptions usually are the guys that get talked about. Now, I get it. Trent McDuffie plays with the best American athlete. He plays with maybe the most famous American athlete right now, and he plays with a future first ballot Hall of Fame defensive lineman. So there's only so much kind of praise to be given. But there's a lot of conversation about Patrick Surtain II and what kind of corner that he is, and I think it's a lot deserved. He's been a fantastic player. The Chiefs have a pretty comparable player on their side as well with Trent McDuffie, so you're getting a chance to see two of the better cornerbacks in the National Football League going up against each other. All right, coming up on the side, let's get to the most important games this weekend in college football, also the NFL. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5, The Fan.
All right, let's talk about some of the action that we have this weekend in both college football and the NFL. Let's start with college football. This is, I would say, a separation Saturday in the SEC. The two most important games this weekend are in the SEC. Georgia goes on the road to play Ole Miss. Over the course of the show, the line has come down a little bit. You can get Georgia -1.5 right now. So basically a coin flip kind of game. In these scenarios, I think it's always important to note, because we know how important home field advantage is, they're telling you that they think it's pretty obvious that Georgia is the best team. Now, I think that's clear, but don't let that kind of scare you off, I think, when it comes to Georgia. I'll ask you one question. Who do you trust in a big game? Is it Kirby Smart or is it Lane Kiffin? Because I know who I trust in this scenario. I trust Georgia. I think they are giving you a gift at Georgia -1.5. I think they're giving you a gift at Georgia -2.5. I think they are clearly better than Ole Miss. I think Georgia goes on the road, and I think they win. Also in the SEC, you got Alabama on the road against LSU. Now, let's be honest about what this is. This is a playoff game. I know it doesn't look like a playoff game, but trust me, Alabama is 6-2, LSU is 6-2. I know that we perceive there to be a SEC bias. LSU is not making it with three losses, and neither is Alabama. So whoever loses this game is out. Now, I trust Alabama a little bit more than I trust LSU, but you're talking about a night game at LSU, and they brought a live tiger to the venue. Yes, I'm talking about like Scarface. You guys remember when he got married and he was walking with Michelle Pfeiffer and they had a tiger in the backyard? LSU, they are going to have a tiger on the sideline. Now, I'm surprised that you're even allowed to do that, but they plan on having a tiger on the sideline. I'm taking Alabama. I'm taking Alabama. I feel kind of bad this week because I'm taking a lot of chalk. Georgia is chalk. Alabama is chalk. I can't believe that Iowa State is only a 2.5-point favorite against Kansas. That feels very, very obvious to me. There is a handful of these games that they seem kind of obvious. Indiana, they're 14-point favorites at home against Michigan. Michigan, they can't score. So this feels like a very chalky, predictable week in college football, but it's also college football, so it is usually not as predictable as we think it's going to be. Think about last week. I didn't think Clemson was on upset alert, and they ended up losing at home to Louisville. So that is just basically kind of how this thing goes. All right, let's talk about the NFL and the games that they have this weekend in the sport. Now, I'm not saying the Chiefs and Broncos is not an important game, because it is. It's a divisional matchup. It's a very important game. I think the best game this weekend is actually Steelers and Commanders. That game is also at noon, so you're going to have to red zone that bad boy if you want to watch it. But the Commanders, they have obviously been one of the better stories in the National Football League. Pittsburgh, at least for me, maybe not for you, but for me, they have been a surprise team. I actually think that Pittsburgh goes on the road, and I think they win this game. That defense going up against a young quarterback, I'm pretty sure that Pittsburgh is also coming off their bye week, so they should be kind of healthy coming into this matchup. I think it is pretty obvious that they are better with Russell Wilson at quarterback than they are with Justin Fields. There's a lot of things to like about this Steelers team heading into the second half of their schedule, which really is about to pick up. Pittsburgh has by far and away the most difficult second half of the season schedule. They have, over the course of the next month, Washington, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. So those are their next four games. That's not even until you get to the second half of the season where they have a three-game and 10-day stretch where they play Philly on the road, Baltimore on the road, and they play Kansas City. So there is not a team in the league that has a more difficult final 2 months of the season than the Steelers. But I think they get off to a good start. I think they go on the road after their bye week, and I think they beat Washington in Washington.
This is why it was so important for Pittsburgh to get a lot of those wins early. They stacked up wins, right? We talked about this with the Royals early on in the year. We were talking about how important it is to stack up wins because eventually your schedule is going to get harder, and that has hit Pittsburgh hard to where, yeah, they were able to take on some of the cupcakes of the league, and now they're really going to hit this schedule hard. So, you know, I don't think that Pittsburgh is as good as their schedule says. I just don't believe in their quarterback situation, but because they were able to stack up those wins, they're going to be a contender for the playoffs.
Yeah, I do think this with Russell Wilson, and I can maybe shoot Russell Wilson a little bit of bail here. How much of our perception about Russell Wilson is because he played with Nathaniel Hackett for 1 year, where last year Russell Wilson was not bad with Denver, and he also has been pretty decent so far this year that I understand it's like first impressions, and he went to the Broncos, and he was out of Seattle, and we all were watching, and they were supposed to be so good, and he was terrible, but over the course of the last year and a half, Russell Wilson has not been that bad. I think he's been a competitive quarterback. I don't want to say he's been one of the better quarterbacks in the league, but he's been a pretty competitive quarterback. The Bills, they go on the road to play the Colts. The Colts are still trying to keep themselves in the playoff conversation. We obviously have talked about the Broncos and the Chiefs. Are the Falcons in a tough spot going on the road against New Orleans? This is where when you gamble on these games, the fact that this line is a 3.5, oh, they're setting you up. You can see it coming a mile away. That hook, it gets you every single time. The Falcons win, but they only win by 3. The casino takes your money, and you're just sitting there mad because you knew you were right about the game. But no, you were not right about the game. We also got a sleepy 3:25 game. It's the Eagles and the Cowboys game. I get it. I understand it's America's team and the Cowboys are supposed to be good this year and the Eagles are good this year, but that's a 3:25. That's a nap. I'm here to tell you right now, that Eagles and Cowboys game, after the Chiefs game is up, at least in that first half, that is a nap. Listen to the 3 o'clock games. Titans and Chargers, Eagles, Cowboys, Jets and Cardinals. Those are the 3:25 games. Terrible. They're all three terrible matchups.
Maybe the Chiefs should have been playing at 3:25.
Terrible matchups. No, I'm not interested in either one of them. Titans and Chargers? Terrible. I also, I think the Cardinals are going to win at home against the Jets.
I've been saying all year that Cardinals sneaky good.
I think so too.
I think the Cardinals are a real contender for the AFC West or the NFC West. It's a down year, but I also really like their head coach. I think Kyler Murray is fun to play. And if you haven't played him before or, you know, a guy like him before, he's hard to cover. You know, he's been playing a little less Call of Duty, it seems like. So, you know,
That's always good.
I think that sneaky good Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm with you. I actually think they're going to win. They're underdogs at home. People are just still really high on the Jets. I think people have kind of overreacted to their win, given how banged up the Texans are. But yeah, I think the Cardinals are better than the Jets, and they're at home, and you're getting plus money. I think you got to take them in this matchup. So I would say that this is a very telling week in both college football and also the NFL. We went through the matchups in college, and I would say this is a really telling week for the Broncos. This is a really telling week for the Indianapolis Colts, the Steelers, and the Commanders. This is a really, and I would also say the Jets too. Like the Jets, we mentioned Cincinnati. The Jets have also run out of leeway as well. They're 3-6. You can't afford to continue losing games. If the Jets are going to do this thing, it starts with them going on the road and beating Arizona. All right, I'm out of here. Quentin, I appreciate your help. For those of you that are about to get ready for the KU game, good luck to both sides. As we sign off for the day, let me tell you guys, I'll let Daniel Craig take you home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.